We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we work and live, the Awabakal and Worimi people, and pay our respects to elders past and present. We celebrate the stories, culture, and traditions of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders of all communities who also work and live on this land.
You're listening to Boob to Food, the podcast with Luca McCabe and Kate Holm. There is so much noise in the parenting space.
And we don't mean the tantruming toddler. We understand it can feel confusing, conflicting, and overwhelming.
That's why we are bringing our years of experience as a midwife, nutritionist, and naturopath.
And of course, mums.
So that you can confidently navigate the roller coaster of motherhood from boob to food and beyond.
Each week, you'll hear practical wisdom, expert advice, and inspirational stories of other mums in the depths of this parenting journey.
Let's dive in.
Today's episode is brought to you by BioFirst. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Boob to Food, the podcast. Hello, Luca. I have seen you in person, but not that much recently, although we're about to be away together for a few days, which is exciting.
Our first camping trip together.
I know.
Intimate than a camping trip.
Well, we've been away together, just us, but we haven't had the families away together.
Can we share a bed?
We haven't.
Yeah.
Can't remember.
I think our first trip away.
Yeah, we did.
Stinch and got us a bed to share.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe there is more intimate. Although I hand expressed you too. That's pretty intimate, isn't it?
Yes, this is true.
Anyway, family bonding time. I know I'm really excited to go away.
Yeah, it'll be really fun. We're going with our dietitian Renee and her family as well. So you guys have bonded. You know your families get along well, hopefully. Hopefully ours do too. But what else has been happening in your world?
I don't know. It's school holidays at the moment. So if everyone can hear some like elephants behind me, it's my children. So sorry about that, but they're only as quiet as I can make them. My husband has told me, even though I'd have a podcast, that he will not get out of the house. So ignore the chaos in the background if you can hear it. But yeah, I'm trying to think, since we last did an intro, I think I was complaining about Will getting out of his bed and that we had one night he slept through and I think I told everyone too early and then we're back to 8,000 wake-ups again. Aww. So that's good. So still has not slept in his big boy bed except for once. And it was funny, the one time he woke up and he had a fever. So that's probably why slept through that one time. So anyway, I'm very sleep deprived at the moment, but I probably can't complain to you because you have a new baby and also would be feeling it. But
no,
I'm just over it.
It's like you feel like you get to that age and you should be, you know, getting some kind of respite. So you can totally complain. It's okay.
I've been waiting so we're going camping in like 2 days. Mm. And he's always sleeps bad on camping trips and just ends up in our bed. And so I'm like waiting for that trip because then our next camping trips not for a few weeks, and I think after this one I'm going to actually like try and get him to stay in his bed because I actually don't do anything about it. Like he waddles in and I just let him come in. I haven't ever actually tried to put him back into his bed, so I'm waiting for this and then I'll do that and put in the hard yards and hopefully it will only be a few days of walking him back to his bed every time he gets out. And I'm going to buy a pool noodle because I'm even though he has a floor bed, I still think he it was so funny not funny. This is why you need to make sure you're listening for your kids. But last night at like 8:30, I heard him crying and I was like, oh, he's already up. Like I was still awake. I thought that's annoying. And I thought, I'll see if I can get him back to bed because I'm already awake still. I'm not that tired. Anyway, poor thing, I went in his room and I had put him in his sleeping bag last night because I thought maybe he's cold and he's kicking the blanket off. So I'm like, let's just bring back the sleeping bag. I put him back in it. Anyway, he had rolled out of his bed, but he had gotten tangled in the doona and he was like a little cocoon but like on the floor and he couldn't get out of it. He was just crying. Anyway, so I'm going to buy a pool noodle. Have you seen that trick where you put it under the
–
yeah, where you put it under the bottom sheet and – just as like a bit of a bumper and see if that stops. I don't know. I'm trying to hold on to any hope that I can get him to stay in bed. But I'm wondering if that's what's happening, if he's rolling out of bed and that's what's waking him up. Because he could get out of his cot, and that's why we transitioned him. So it's not the fact that he can all of a sudden get out, because he always has been able to get out. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Anyway. I
have my fingers crossed. I saw somebody suggested that maybe if he comes into your bed, then you should hop up and go back into his bed. So
I
then,
did do that one
oh,
night.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
How did it go?
Because he was just kicking me. Mm. Well, after about 2 hours, I heard him screaming for me, so I went back. But that's the problem. He only wants me anyway. Anyway.
So hard.
And, like, I've mentioned this before. I would not mind co-sleeping, honestly, but he just doesn't sleep. That's the problem. Like, he's literally pats me on the face and is like, "Mum, you there?" every half an hour, it feels like. Mm. So no one's actually sleeping. Whereas if you just lied there and went to sleep, like, I quite like co-sleeping if they do that and, you know, you can have some cuddles, but this is not that. And anyway, so I'm just that. And then, yeah, school holidays, which is lovely. And I love school holidays. This is your first taste of it.
I know.
Back to having no routine. It's so nice.
Well, I have quite enjoyed, like, the rhythm of the school drop-off and pick-up, but my school drop-off is later than yours, so that's probably the only reason. If I had to be there earlier, I don't think I'd cope. But so Jude's school doesn't start until 9:30, so I actually can leave, like, after the traffic and still get there.
Oh,
and it's
good.
It's been working quite well, but at the same time, I'm very much like a slow morning person. So not having to, like, get everyone dressed and get all of the lunch boxes made and all of that sort of stuff will be really nice for a few weeks. And I can already see, like, Jude and Bowie, they really have missed each other. So I think for them to have that time together again, I don't know, maybe they'll get sick of it and start fighting by the end of the holidays. But I think it'll be nice, particularly for Bowie, to just have him back around and, yeah, have her little buddy for a while. But it's strange now being on school term time, like, only being able to book holidays, well, mostly booking holidays in the school terms, and, like, I don't know, it feels different. We don't have that same flexibility.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, that's a hard thing. The one good thing about school holidays is, like, everyone's on school holidays,
yeah,
so it's
true.
Quite fun. It kind of feels like you go back to that early days when you're, you know, have one child and everyone's on maternity leave and
yeah.
You know, you get that hangs. It's kind of like that for 2 weeks, which is nice. Everyone's sort of hanging out and then, yeah. So I always find school holidays so busy and fun.
Yeah, already I'm thinking, like, as we're away for, you know, a few days in that first week, and then I'll still be working and Michael'll still be working, and we've got a few things, like, booked in. Like, Bowie's really gotten into her dancing, so she's doing a little school holiday workshop, which I just think is the cutest thing. I've always wanted to be a dance mom. but it's like, oh, going to blink and already the 2 weeks is gone. Like, throw a couple of catch-ups in there and that's it, done. Mm. But, of course, I picked Jude up from school on his last day and I could just see on his face that he was unwell. I was like, no. And it's not that it's anything serious, but I don't know if you have this same, like, it's not anxiety, but just I dread that I know it's going to then go through the rest of the family. I'm like, it's only going to be a matter of time before this makes its way to me. So far, it's just stayed with him. So I'm hoping that he'll be right for us to come camping and nobody else will be unwell. It's like, why does this have to be our school holiday gift? I don't want it.
Yeah. I know, that's the worst thing here with sickness, like waiting for it to do the rounds through everyone.
Yeah.
You're like,
yeah. Like, I know I can manage the illness, that's fine. But if it makes its way to Immy, and then if she's unwell and then she's not sleeping, then inevitably I'm going to get it. And then who knows how long that would drag on for. And it's a cough. I'm like, I don't know if I have the pelvic floor for a cough. Like,
Is it the mold?
Maybe. Yes.
No.
Good segue.
That'll make sense when people listen to today's episode.
Stay tuned for that. Well, before we jump into the episode, you've done your book club. Tell us about
I finally finished a book, everyone, for my book club. I think I mentioned it a few weeks ago and it was called I'm Glad My Mum Died, which is a horrific name of a book. And the author was Jeanette McCurdy, who is like the iCarly star.
Okay.
That show. Do you remember that show, iCarly? Anyway, it was after my time too, but I remember seeing it on Nickelodeon. Anyway, it's actually interesting because heaps of stuff's come out about Nickelodeon since this book as well with, what was her name? Amanda Bynes.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a name?
I'm so out of the pop culture loop. I don't know.
You'd remember her. Anyway, yeah, it's like about abuse and things with some of the – anyway, and this book kind of talks about that. But I didn't really know what to expect with this book. I just saw the title and I'd heard people say it was good and I thought this is a very interesting title. I'm going to read it.
And your mum recommended it, didn't she?
Yeah. And Jesse was like, what is this book when he saw it? And then it was funny because Flynn's reading it, like the cover, and he's like, I'm glad my mum died. He's like, why are you reading that? And I said, I think it's satire. But when I read it, I was like, I don't know if it's satire or not. Like, anyway, great book, super interesting. It was actually mostly about eating disorder, to be honest. So really sad, like how the mum basically like forced her into an eating disorder and into acting when she didn't want to do it. And
so is it a true story?
Yeah. Oh. Sorry. It's a true story.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So when I think she was, what age was she? Like 10 or something. Mm-hmm. And I think she started like being a bit prepubescent and, you know, putting on a little bit of weight as you do when you're prepubescent and, you know, getting the little, like nipple buds and things like that happen to girls. And I think she questioned her mum, like, you know, what is this? And the mum said, you're eating too much food, like you need to go on a calorie deficit diet. And this was at like 10. Aww. And then basically just sparked a lifelong eating disorder, like really bad from there. Anyway, really interesting story. But, yeah, I really liked that book actually. So okay. I will give it a 4 out of 10 because it took
4 out of 10.
You liked 10.5.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound like you liked it that much.
Sorry, 4 out of 5 because I kept being an autobiography, I kept putting it down like it didn't hook me like, you know, another story would, for example. But I really liked it. It was interesting.
Okay.
Have you read anything for the book club or not?
No, absolutely nothing. I went to the library and I like borrowed all these books, but I loved Apples Never Fall, but I haven't gotten into any of the other ones. And then I think because I haven't gotten into anything, I haven't been making the time for it either. So I've just been filling my time doing other things, not leisure, well, probably just working or going to sleep.
We talked about that book and remember I was so excited that they were bringing out a show.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Oh, you watched it?
Don't watch it.
Yeah. Okay. I saw
really
the
bad casting.
Well, that was the thing. I saw the cast and I was like, no, they don't look how I imagined. So I was like, I don't think I want to ruin it.
I watched 2 episodes. I was like, I can't watch this. It's ruining the book for me. So that was a bit of a disappointment.
Okay. Well, thanks for doing that for me so I don't have to.
No worries. You can just
like road test all the books and the shows and I'll jump on your recommendations because I'm
I have a huge pile of books that you can have because I don't like Kindles. So I like hard copies.
Same.
So.
That's like one similarity that we have.
Library.
There's so much about us as we, you know, talk more on the podcast or just like getting to know you more. I'm like, we are so yin and yang. And there's like a handful of things that I'm like, no, that's the same.
Well, at least our eating habits are similar. Yeah. We're promoting the same food. So we probably should be on board with that.
Well, on today's episode, we welcome back the lovely Alex Stewart, who is just so amazing. She's a wealth of knowledge across so many topics. She runs Low Tox Life. She's got books. She's got courses. She's got a TED Talk. She's got everything. And today we bring her back to talk about mold, which is a topic that is very important to her. She's super knowledgeable about from her both personal and professional experience. I get incredibly freaked out, but without need because she's super practical and she actually is really reassuring and gives you lots of tips if you are struggling with mold in your house or if you've never considered it before. Meanwhile, I'm investigating how I can knock down and rebuild my whole house. But anyway, she did not encourage me to do that. I just spiraled.
I was going to say this episode is not meant to be a fear-mongering
episode.
Not at all. We talk about a lot of preventative stuff. So if you know, you don't have to listen if you don't have mold.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, if you don't have mold, it doesn't mean don't listen because I have a brand new house and took so much advice from this to keep my house mold free. So yeah, we really hope that you love this listen.
Welcome back to the podcast, lovely Alex. We are always excited to speak to you and listen to the soothing sound of your voice.
And coming today, to you talking about mold and trying to make it soothing. Let's do it.
Very soothing, relaxing topic to discuss. A bit of a different one from what we spoke about last time. We were talking all about how we can be lower tox for our families and for our kids. But yes, today talking about mold. But for those who haven't come across your work before or listened to our previous episode, can you just tell us a little bit about who you are and all of the many wonderful things you do?
Yes. So 15 years ago, I decided to start a blog based on having cracked the code of my chronic tonsillitis, realizing actually for me, and I say for me because I'm so not one of those people who tries to impose diets on anyone else, gluten really was a huge piece of my inflammatory puzzle that was causing me to get sick a lot. And removing that from my diet was like, oh, wow. Best thing about that happening 20 years ago, of course, is there was gluten in every packaged food, which threw me into the arms of produce. And I genuinely believe that was one of the best gifts of the timing of that gluten-free need, because these days you could just switch to gluten-free Oreos, gluten-free cheesy puffs, gluten-free everything, and you miss that piece of the processed food being a huge part of this chronic disease picture that we're seeing in our kids and ourselves so much. So that was like the first inkling. Then you cut to the baby shower where I get the cute little baby products from all my friends to set me up for the nursery 15 years ago. I cannot believe. And I'm like, oh, I'm really good at reading food labels. I'll look at this stuff. Boom. Carcinogens, endocrine disruptors, really harsh preservatives that exacerbate or cause eczema, dermatitis, psoriasis, hives. And I'm like, what? So that led me to kind of start completing what that low-tox living picture looked like. And I just knew, I had such a strong gut feel that people would care about this if they knew there were other options. And even though the other options were few and far between 15 years ago, it was really quite a small market of concern. These days we are spoilt for choice. And I feel like starting that blog and, you know, I was very passionate about naming it something that felt inclusive and not too harsh or intense. So that's how low-tox, the phrase, was born. And then books and podcasts and all sorts of things later. I still remember doing my first workshop at Transition Bondi, a really awesome hippie place where people would get together who cared about the planet. And it was chicken stock, like how to make chicken stock. Like 13 years ago, and I think I got paid like $150.
I love it.
And it felt like the best $150 I ever earned. And people really cared and they wanted to, how come yours is jiggly? How come mine isn't? And there were just so few of us having these conversations. And I think of cutting to now, like, it's just amazing where this has gone, not just because of me, but because a whole bunch of people around the world said, something's not right here. And so lowtoxlife.com has everything you need to know and explore if you want to look at that work. But I'm also conscious that we are here to talk about probably my biggest extra learning curve, let's call it a bonus round that I got in this whole thing when I became very, very sick. 8 years ago. And
is it that long, Alex?
It was 2016.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I still remember my panicked phone calls to you, Katie, going, nothing's working. I don't know what to do. And I always knew what to do. I was really at a place where I felt very in control of my health. And to go from that and to go from being called the low-tox queen, educating everybody and helping you live your best life, ditching the toxins, and then having 35 symptoms that no doctor test or scan could explain was, I can't sugarcoat it. It was the worst year of my life. It was so dark. Everything started getting so bad. I remember, it's not very cheery, but I remember a travel agent booking, because I'm a speaker, right? So I travel a lot, booking a flight for me to LA for a conference and asking if anyone I was traveling with, because my family was going to come, and they asked if there's anyone, it's just standard question for travel agents. does anyone in your party need a wheelchair? And it was November when that booking was made for a March trip. And with the way my health was tracking and with the way I was finding it hard to walk Seb to school, I was like, I don't know yet. Can I get back to you? Because I thought I might. And I don't think I've ever actually felt that when I've said it, but I just felt it then, like thinking of 8 years ago me. And part of the reason I did take such a, not a, a different turn with low-tox life, but I started to incorporate environmental toxins in a much stronger way than I might have otherwise, is I never want anyone to spend that much money in the dark on their health and be gaslit that much and have it be about something that if you just knew there might be a connection, you could accelerate your transition through that dark time and get better and have the resources you need. It became like such a call to give back, because it's not very productive for people to be A, that sick, or be that broke, have a huge amount to give the world.
Yeah. And I think like, to jump to the ending of the story, which probably it's not the ending, but at least the place that you're at now, like you are in a place where you're really well. So even if we're talking about mold today and it feels big and it feels scary, know that, like you said, there are some, you know, things that you can do to manage the environment, to manage your own health. And you're not sitting here currently feeling like you need a wheelchair. You're out playing tennis and feeling vibrant and teaching and speaking and doing all of the amazing things you do again.
Yes, exactly. And I coach some clients who are really in those dark places, and to help them realize that you don't have to be there forever. And we see it in the Facebook public chat groups around mold, Toxic Mold Support Australia is the sexiest name for a Facebook group ever, but it's very helpful and there are success stories. And it's, I mean, mold is a huge problem, not just for the person who's experiencing it, but societally and across so many industries, because we have this inability to actually name it, to name it to the point where someone can walk into any GP and have that person say, what is the state of your house? Have you noticed any leaks or water damage from the recent rains? Have you noticed any mold growing anywhere, some bubbling paint, some tea staining in the ceiling that might help us make a connection with these inexplicable symptoms and an environmental factor? Until we get to the point where our Australian Medical Association, or the American one for that matter, for those listening across the pond, can actually gift us that luxury of having it in textbooks. Yes, mold can affect people. Yes, it can be awful. And we can talk about the different ways. Then we are not going to have legal recourse against landlords for not doing proper remediation. We're not going to have legal recourse when builders don't do the right job, or a waterproofing job is done by a rookie and kind of half-assed, and then you have a leaking bathroom already for something you just spent like 50 grand on. There's no recourse. That insurance companies take like 2 weeks to come and test your house after a flood event. Mold starts growing in 2 days. Like we can't afford to almost to recognize that mold is the problem it is for human health, because of the amount of ramifications there would be, the amount of government buildings. I have a firefighter client who explained how the roof caved in on them one night when they were sleeping on duty, and they just saw all this mold in the ceiling cavity. And he and one other colleague became really sick, but everyone else didn't. So there's that genetic piece potentially, or there's how stressed have you been and what state is your immune system in currently that's going to mean you fall like a domino, but other people stay standing. There's so many pieces to it. And I think that vagueness and that inability to compartmentalize it as an illness that looks the same for everybody is one of the challenges, as well as the cost to multiple industries admitting that we actually need change. It's big. Like it's I can't pretend it's not a big topic. That's why I did a TED talk on it. It's big. But the good news is it is something we can learn about, get some literacy on and feel empowered around. So that's what we're going to do now.
Yes.
Can you, yeah. Let's move to that part.
Can you explain, well, what is mold then, and mold illness too? I'm actually really interested to know how you knew you had mold illness, but I thought it might be better to start with what is mold.
Yeah, well, mold is part of the fungi kingdom. And for anyone that's been on a bushwalk and you see the forest floor and you have that beautiful earthy kind of smell, or anyone who's had a compost bin, things get composted. Mold composts things. It breaks things down. That's its job. And unfortunately, in our built environments, a lot more mold is allowed to flourish and grow than would be healthy for us. And it gets into us, ear, nose, throat, on our skin, and starts to decompose us. That's how Dr. Jill Krista puts it. And I think that is so accurate. It's certainly how it feels. It feels like you're being composted. It's so awful. And it literally feels like life is seeping out of you when you get affected by mold. So how do you know it's mold illness? Like for me, it took so long. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had brain scans, heart scans, so many scans, so many supplements, so many medications. I went everywhere. I'm not, opposed to anything that might help. But it was actually one of my last ditched attempts. I'd followed this doctor online in the States, and I just thought, I think I have to book a consult with him. And it was like another $750. But I was sitting there on a broken, crackly Skype call, and he asked me, do you remember, like, I know you've said there's no mold in your house now, you can't see any, but do you remember any leaks or anything happening during the time that you've lived there? And this was beautiful, big apartment. We'd lived there for 7 years. We thought our landlord was amazing because he totally patched everything up. The tradie came and painted over everything after the big rains that happened right when we moved in. But of course, that mold was just growing behind the antifungal paint through the wall cavities. And old Art Decos have those little vents. So mycotoxins just blowing in through those, blowing in through window cavities when you have the windows open. I said yes. He did a bit more questioning in that space. Based on my symptoms, he said, I really do think this is a mold problem that you've got. Let's try. And I remember he said, if it is, three supplements will really move the needle and just tell us. And it was high dose, like crazy high dose of liposomal B12, 4 mils. I mean, that's enormous. It's almost a teaspoon. I think we're supposed to take like an eighth of a teaspoon would be, Katie, am I right there? Would be about a dose. So a huge amount of B vitamins for the nervous system, a huge amount of ubiquinol for the mitochondria, and charcoal before bed to start mopping up some of the internal toxins. He said, if those three things move the needle for you 20% this week, I'm pretty convinced this is an environmental illness. And it did. I got like 6 hours sleep for the first time in months. And I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. I feel like a million bucks. And I really didn't feel great, but compared to what I'd been through. And so that was when we started working on it and I started looking into that. I turned to the wonderful Nicole Bilsma, who is the founder of the Australian Environmental College, that trains building biologists and mold technicians. And she really spearheaded this whole awareness. I said, Nicole, I think I've got that thing that I've interviewed you on briefly once for a course. I think it's affecting me. And that was the start of the journey. And it was the start of interviewing all the health professionals that were actually working in this space, not many of which there were, and starting to connect more to what building biologists do, how we test mold, what's the difference between like mold that grows on your lemon that you really don't need to worry about so much, just chuck it out, versus mold and the species of mold that you find in water-damaged situations. Those are the ones that tend to affect human health the most. And so you can do dust testing, air sampling, ERMI testing, which is like a PCR dust test. There's a lot of different ways you can approach knowing whether you have one of those damaging molds and at what level they might be in your house and if they're active. And this is where I would love to sort of start to then look at, you know, how we can help people know, because half the time it's not even water damage. You can actually just have water damage molds growing in your space because you're not cleaning your aircon out regularly enough, or you're not monitoring your indoor humidity and going, oh, I need to chuck the dehumidifier on. It's always over 60% in here. These sorts of things can be game changing.
Things that I've never done in my life.
I was going to say every parent listening is thinking, "Yep, I've definitely cleaned the aircon recently."
Yeah, so please,
if
you have duct work, you should be changing your filter every 3 months. If you have a split system, you should be servicing it, especially if you live somewhere where you use it a lot. You should be servicing it every 6 months. At the very least, washing the filter and replacing it every 3 months.
I have ducted aircon and we've lived here for like 18 months and I don't think we've ever done anything.
Yeah. So just make, you know how...
I didn't even know you could change the filter.
Yes. And this is what I'm talking about. Our literacy around prevention is just as bad as our inability to act fast enough in big things like floods and big rainstorms. Both things are shockingly bad. And so my favorite thing about that is if you and I just know a bit more, then half the time we can actually stop mold from being a huge health disaster. And maybe I'll just share, because we've got so many parents who listen, how you might know that you're being affected by mold, because it's not all, oh, I need a wheelchair. That's more the inflammatory presentation. And I very much had that inflammatory toxicity presentation. But there's also the allergic presentation that overlaps with inflammation, of course. And Katie, you would be able to speak to this much better than me. But is your kid, like, we had a nickname for Seb when he was a toddler, which was Mr. Snuffleupagus. I'm not joking. When he slept, he was like just a little Mr. Snuffleupagus, and it was adorable. But I didn't realize it was because he was in a bedroom that had mold. I just thought he was just so cute the way he made those sweet noises. It was less cute when I was starting to get sick myself, and then he developed a cough that just did not stop. Like this cough just did not go away no matter what we did. And it was less cute when I realized he had a friend over, it was a spelling bee, and I thought, oh, I'm going to be that really good parent that tests the kids on their words because they've got their spelling bee tomorrow. And I see his friend writing in beautiful, perfect little letters, and Seb's like five times as big, super messy. I'm like, oh, I didn't realize he had a writing problem. So the fine motor skills develop poorly when you are affected by mold. And we actually, he used to do Kumon for a while to just get good at his arithmetic. And I remember we were in another water damaged place a couple of years later, once we'd realized we moved a lot. And it was a Kumon booklet from the water damaged place. And then 2 weeks later, when we were in a non-water damaged place, and his writing was perfect and neat and small. But 2 weeks ago, it was massive and messy and tearing through the page. I mean, so that's not normal.
Yeah, and I think the challenge here, both for our kids but also for adults, is that because it's not a clear cut, like you have mold and you get this symptom, and a lot of the symptoms can be vague and they can be different from person to person depending on your susceptibility, depending on other health things or nutritional things or environmental things going or life things going on. And so there, you know, it's not to say like, okay, oh, my child has a snuffly nose and poor handwriting, I must have like mold everywhere.
Yes.
There's so many differentials, but it's a really important consideration, because if it is the mold, like you experienced, Alex, it's like you go down every other avenue and you're coming up with no answers, but it could be this thing that's really modifiable, not always easily, but
modifiable nonetheless.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when there are lots of differentials, we want all of the information that's going to help us get to, oh, what are the biggest levers that are affecting my kid or me right now? And how can I find those out as quickly as possible? And because mold isn't a huge part of the conversation, certainly not in a conventional GP visit, no offence to GPs, everyone's just doing what they do when they're taught what to do, then it does often, as you say, end up being like the final stop in the road. It was certainly that way for me, and I already knew a lot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, imagine people who've got no idea. And often I'll be in my chat groups or whatever, just, you know, having a chat in community, DMs, and I'll be like, can you just check behind the bed or the wardrobe that's pressed up against the wall? And they'll find a big blanket of mold, like, behind there, or mold under the mattress. And they're like, oh, okay. And
I'm like,
you know,
cringing because this has happened in our over 100-year-old house. All these things that we're semi-turning a blind eye to, but it definitely lingers. I mean, I should say, and maybe actually this might be something we speak to, like, will mold impact everyone in the same way or at all?
No. As I said, you have potential genetic implication. You have how stressed or how heightened your nervous system might be. Mm-hmm. That has been a factor with how sick people get. You have the general state of your immune system at play. Like, my husband does not get ill at all. He'll get a bit snuffly, so more the light allergic kind of picture, but he doesn't get sick at all. Thank gosh, because he was able to be our to-do list champion through 7 moves during the pandemic. It's different for different people. But I would say if you do basic standard testing and someone continues to be sick despite nothing showing up anywhere, look to the environment. Just look and tick those boxes as well, because it could be part of the picture.
With you, when you realize, oh, this might be mold, did you just go home and like throw a hammer through the wall or something to see? Because sometimes it's not visible, you know, and like, but then, you know, just before we moved into this house, which we've nearly renovated, but before that we lived in an old house, and my daughter had this like lingering cough that just went on and on and on and on. And when we moved here, it went away, which now I think was at the house. Like, I don't know. But I did always have in my mind, oh, it could be mold, but I couldn't see any mold. But I also, it was a rental and I didn't want to like put a hammer through the wall and see if there was any mold. So do you, yeah, what did you do? Did you go home and do that, or do you just get like someone official to come out and test?
I got someone to test.
Throwing hammers.
So, and this is the thing. You bring up such a good point, Luca, because we actually, the most toxic place we lived in was 2 houses after, and we thought this was going to be like, oh, this is where we're just going to stay for years. Our plan is to probably move to the country after school years anyway, and but this is where we want to be. Stunning. Like, it looked like we thought, let's just spend a bit more, get something really, really good, something really new. It was 3 years old. It looked like something that you would do photo shoots in. It was so pretty, beautiful tile, lovely new kitchen. And that was the most toxic. That had the highest mold spore counts of the water damage molds out of anywhere, including the Art Deco apartment. So it is not discriminate against old necessarily, but that can be a factor that does increase things. So testing-wise, you can do a few things. If you're a homeowner and you need to do this for insurance purposes, one of the best tips I got from David Keane, who's an advocate for people trying to do insurance claims in this space, is to start taking pictures and just documenting everything, and to not let an insurance company's tester come in and just test an air sample right in the middle of a room, but to actually test near a wall where there's dust and where you think the problem might be. So if you see things like bubbling paint, tea staining on a ceiling, like that kind of pale brownie kind of coloured staining on the ceiling where like a cracked tile might have allowed water to come through. If you actually see mold, like you said, it's not always that you see it. You know, we often think of a mold problem as this current affair bust in, you know, or awful housing commission situation where often those houses are not looked after at all and people are getting sick and you see black mold all over a ceiling. Mm-hmm. It's not always that. I mean, we could not see any mold at all. In any of the water damaged places we've been, we never had that big black wall kind of stereotype situation. So you can do an air sample, but do it as close to where you are thinking there might be a problem or the room that like your kid is having a lingering symptom, do it there. Don't just kind of randomly test somewhere else in the house. And you can do that through a mold technician, a building biologist, and I would recommend if you've got money to do the testing thoroughly, to do a couple of air samples of different places. They'll often test a control of like what's the outside environment as well. To do agitation samples or swabbing. It can be very enlightening to swab the inside of an air conditioning unit and see what's happening there. That'll tell you a lot because often with air conditioners it's cladosporium and cladosporium can tend to give us those lingering coughs or snuffly noses rather than the neuro symptoms, which tend to come more from the Wollemia, Stachybotrys and Cotomium and Aspergillus. Aspergillus kind of also does a lot to the lungs. Aspergillosis is actually a disease that is recognized in medicine, fungal balls and all that kind of jazz. So testing air, testing with swabs, testing with agitation if you're talking about a carpet. So they like take a little air cassette, agitate the carpet and then like suck the air into the little cassette and then send that off to a lab so that you actually see what's in a carpet. Swabbing an aircon. Or if you want to do the PCR test, that's not recognised by insurance companies in our country, but it does tell you a more historic picture of all the species that have been there because you're testing your dust and they send you a cloth and you just dust everywhere in your house. Try not to have it cleaned the first, the couple of weeks before you're testing so that it's a more natural environment in your house. I love
very
the giving people permission to stop cleaning your house for 2 weeks. Yes, please. So good. And then you'll get a more accurate picture and then you get results. And the cool thing about when mold technicians and building biologists do the testing with their air and swab and cassettes is you see how much activity mold, like is it growing right now? You get that kind of data. And I like that kind of data because it's less scary than a PCR test where you don't get to find out, like, is it active though? Because if it's active, then we can look to how are we controlling moisture in our indoor air environment? What is the humidity? Like, this is really humid because I've shut my bedroom and I'm talking right next to it. So speaking is really humid. But this is a climate gauge, and for the people listening, I'm holding up something called a climate gauge that shows you the humidity right now in this space, in this room today, and it's 73%. If I let that go and don't dehumidify in the next 2 days, if I've got a bit of dust on my skirting boards or the plantation shutters, then mold will start to grow. That's how mold works. Mold looks for a food source. Its food source is moisture. Moisture is anything above 60% humidity, and it just needs a couple of days to just go, oh, I'm settling in and I'm going to start to grow. That's how quick it is. So I really feel like, because I know we don't have all day, if you feel like you have a big problem, like, oh my gosh, actually, on the other side of the bathroom, there's bubbling paint. I think we might have a pipe problem. Or actually, a lot of us are really, really sick and I want to tick this box. Or I've seen that ceiling leak, or I've seen the tap kind of leaking under the sink and what might be happening behind that kitchen cavity. Get a building biologist or a mold technician who tests this stuff every day and figure out where the moisture is and what you're going to do about it with a professional. There's no shortcut you can take if you've got a legitimate water issue. But the thing we can all do is become humidity literate and control our indoor humidity. It has been the single biggest game changer for me living on the east coast of Australia, where it is above 60% humidity five, six months of the year.
We'll be back after this short break.
Today's episode is brought to you by BioFirst. BioFirst is an Australian family brand who wanted better options for their family and to help as many people as possible. All their products are manufactured locally within Australia. And coming into winter, we wanted to talk about their Kids Manuka Soother Syrup.
Yeah, we are big fans of the Manuka Soother Syrup in our house, so much so that I have to hide it from the kids, put it up really high because they really like the taste, so they want it all the time. But I'll often give it to them if they've got like a tickly throat or a cough or something like that. We all know I'm a big fan of Manuka honey, and it's also really high in vitamin C and antioxidants.
BioFirst have a whole range of skin and immune products for the whole family, and you can use the code BOOP2FOOD for 15% off the entire range. Visit bio-first.com.au to check it out today.
Now let's get back to today's episode.
Mine has rained for the last 800 days in a row.
So much rain. What was with the promise of the hot, dry summer? Where was that? My God.
I say this all the time. And it's so humid at the moment too. So as you're talking, I'm like sweating. Yeah.
And
so hot.
You guys aren't even in the super fun perimenopause phase where that just becomes even more disastrous. I've literally, if you could close up on my face right now, you would see the droplets. But I say it because if you can control your indoor humidity, you can actually control how active mold is in your space and how much of a chance it has to grow. And then on top of that, and I'll give you guys, you know, ask me questions and we'll flesh out what that looks like. But on top of that, if you can then manage your soft furnishings and have a really good rotational cleaning regime, then you're not going to have mold start to grow on things like mattresses. And like the two together are such a game changer. I have been able to live somewhere where there is known previous water damage and mold in this building, which is like 110 years old, and be completely fine. Mm. And it has been because I have learnt how to manage humidity on a day-to-day basis through a bit of a roster system that I've kind of created for myself, because there's no course for that. but it has just been the biggest game changer. And so I think, you know, we have the appliances these days that help us. We have the ability to get literate in this stuff. So let's do that.
I have heaps of questions about dehumidifiers because every time I go to look at buying one, they're quite expensive.
They are.
And then I think, how many do you need? Like, do you have to put one in every room?
No. You only need two, even if you've got a big house.
Two. And where should these be placed?
Great question. So I suggest having a Mac Daddy 50-litre dehumidifier as one. Yes, it's more expensive, but this, like, trust me when I say mold problems are the most expensive thing you will ever have to navigate as a home renter or owner. And so $500 for, you know, just wait till one's on sale. You can use our Oz Climate discount if you want. It's like all the time, low-tox life. There's no kickback in affiliate. They just sponsor our podcast. Please go for it because they add that on top of their sales. So that's useful. But having a 50-litre is big and powerful and awesome. It's not enormous. I've got my little baby right next to me here. And she's about, I'd say, 60 centimetres tall, about 25 centimetres wide, and she's on wheels. So I move her around the house. So I would have a big one like that, because that means you've got something really powerful with a super powerful motor for when the shit hits the fan, like our aircon split system that leaked everywhere all over our built-in robe. You have something super powerful to mitigate damage if it comes up, as well as to deal with those 2 months where it's like 80, 85% humidity some days in January through March, especially on the east coast of Australia. So you need a big, strong, powerful one. And then a small compact like a 16 litre is perfect for moving between, and this is a game changer because so many DMs over the years, how do I clean the mould in my bathroom? I'm like, oh my gosh, can we just actually stop talking about cleaning mould in the bathroom? Nothing works, eh? Mm. Often you have toxic byproducts of mould trying to survive while you're trying to kill it. Mm. In different particles that it emits. And things like exit mold and all that kind of bleachy stuff does not work. It's a cosmetic fix and there's still mold trying to grow. Even vinegar, while it can be helpful and some research shows that it is beneficial, still has high water content that gets left in that surface and creates more food source for mold in the long term. So I say, chuck your 16 or 12 even litre dehumidifier on after the family showers and baths, leave it in there for 2-3 hours, then switch it off. You will never have to clean mould in your bathroom again because it always gets fully dried out. Plus you don't get stinky towels because they get dried out too. It is a game changer. I'm such an evangelist when it comes to humidity control because I've seen it. I have not used anything other than a very simple Castile dilution in water in my bathroom ever since. Mm. My cleaner actually, when she started working with us, said, can I just, where's the mold products? Just for, no, we don't have any. We don't have any mold. She's like, how do you not get any mold? Let me show you. So I taught her. She got one too and started using it. She's like, wow, you're so right. This is amazing. Mm. Just stop it before it becomes a problem. Stop the moisture. We need a T-shirt that says stop the moisture because that is the message. If I could just say like one let this land sentence, it's that. We have to stop the excess moisture that causes the mold in the first place.
Your other manifesto went quite well, Alex. Maybe you need to do a second mold manifesto.
Yeah, maybe I do. I know. But it really is a game changer. So I would then have that 16 litre, the compact that you move between like say, like let's just say you don't have a condenser dryer, you just have a regular dryer and you sometimes have to use it because it's raining or you don't have a balcony or outdoor space. You can use it in your laundry and it's small enough to just keep moving it around. The small study, if you need to dry that out and it's been raining for a few days, small bedrooms. But then your 50 litre, you can move that around as well. So the problem with dehumidifiers is they let out a bit of hot, dry air when you run them. And so you don't want to be running them where you are because that, A, they're noisy as well. So we run the dehumidifier in the bedrooms during the day when we're not in bedrooms. And we run them in the living dining overnight when we're not there. And that's kind of the rotation. And
so it's not like, so you said right now, for example, your room is 75%. Mm. So because I can imagine if like one room 75% on a really humid day, all rooms might be 75% or whatever. What's the, it's above 60,
above
isn't
60,
it? That you don't want
yes.
It? So then how do you move the big one everywhere? How does it?
Well, it's on wheels. So I just, well, we're on a single level situation. If you had an upstairs, downstairs.
I'm a two-story.
Yeah, I would maybe get like a 25 litre for the upstairs that you move through and you could just use that as your bathroom one as well, just keep moving it. Mm. But you basically want to be on a 2-3 day rotation during the summer and or humidity or rain. Mm-hmm. And just it just becomes part of your life. They're actually incredibly cheap to run. It doesn't add more than a couple of bucks to your energy bill a month. So the cost really is in just investing in one. But
do they come with that little thing that you were holding up before that tells you the humidity?
They do sometimes, yes. I think it depends on it. I don't.
So you're not guessing?
Yeah. But
like how sweaty am I?
I actually say if you don't believe me, just buy a couple of these. They're only 20 bucks. So get a couple of those. Yeah. Why I say a couple is because humidity can depend room to room on orientation. So you know how there's often like a block and there'll be the shady guest room in the back that gets used as a study, but no one really wants to live in there because it's a bit darker and it's not It's not as hospitable, I guess. That's often much more humid than the front where, you know, things have been designed for the living spaces to have the most amount of light. So have a couple. I have one in our walk-in robe and one over in the kitchen and one in the living room. I'm just a nerd. That's why I've got three. Two is fine. But just put them in two different parts of your house and you'll be shocked how often, like especially if you make lots of broths and you're doing lots of cooking, slow cooking in the winter, we often think, oh, it's drier in the winter. But if you're doing tons of slow cooking, there's a lot of steam. So it just teaches you to be humidity literate and it teaches you to notice. Please don't panic, but just notice. Go, oh, wow, yeah, that's actually constantly over 60% in there. I've got to dehumidify and then boom. Anyone would think I actually was on AusClimate's payroll. I'm really not.
Maybe you should be.
I know, right? But I genuinely see this as a missing piece for humid climates in the fight against mold becoming the health issue that it is. I mean, think about it. We are building these places, then they're stagnant, like they're still, they're fixed. They don't decompose and then we move on and different field and then we set up a different house next year. You know, we stay here and we stay here for decades. And imagine decades of not addressing excess humidity or decades of not spring cleaning because, I mean, let's face it, most of us don't have the time to move wardrobes away from walls and clean behind them and take all of the covers off our latex mattresses because it's freaking annoying to try and do. Like if you actually just control your humidity,
you won't get
silently freaking out and thinking I need to go and get like a jackhammer and just start knocking my house down.
No, because our house
is like over 100 years old and we love it. Like it's got a lot of those beautiful ornate features that you don't see anymore. But because it's over 100 years old, I imagine like a lot of the materials, like we can't see inside the walls, but what I've been freaking out about is that we've got an ensuite, which was an extension. However, it was done really poorly. And so on the roof, we only just discovered this a few months ago,
the roof of the ceiling of the bathroom or the actual roof of the house?
In general, the drainage point for the drain was just dumping onto the foundations of the house. And so our bathroom is literally sinking. So that's a problem in itself. But it also means that water,
it's actually sinking, you can see it.
I can see it and I'm not observant to this kind of stuff. But it means that the water in the shower pools quite badly. So we're cleaning always to get away like mold. There's plenty of moisture there. But now I'm like, oh my God, the like probably everything under the bathroom would be moldy. It's elevated, but it's like, you know, obviously still getting moisture. So that's my DIY project.
Yeah.
Knock down the house.
I am a big fan of test, don't guess. Like you don't need to jump to any conclusions until you have data.
I think it's a safe conclusion to draw. But I agree with you in general.
I'm trying to talk you off the ledge here, Katie. Look, I mean, sometimes conversations like this and you're here and you're listening and you think, you know what? I've kind of known there was something up with that. My gut's been telling me I need to look in that, but modern life is busy. And we, you know, there are often little kids in the mix and it's just about like functionally moving through a day and getting your to-do list done and adding work into that. I get why these things get left to the wayside. All I can do is hope that just not wanting people to feel awful and then have to navigate an even more expensive remediation down the track when it's permeated through to the next rooms, it is always worth just getting a mold technician in and getting some testing done. No harm in it.
My ledge just
got higher. I want to know about your cleaning regime thing that you were talking about, the other part of it. What do you mean by, apart from just normal cleaning that we all obviously have to do?
So getting your humidity under control and having a rotating dehumidifying system is key. That will mean that you're not encouraging the active mold growth to be happening. So that's key. But then the other part of it is we leave sheets and mattress protectors and things just on far longer than we should. We leave clothes piled up, one on top of each other.
How long is too long? I'm so intrigued by how often people change their sheets.
So
what is considered too long?
Saturday morning, that starts. Every Saturday morning, all the sheets get piled up next to the laundry and we just have it on rotation, in and out of the house, doing other things, but we're just always moving.
So you reckon every week the sheets should be changed?
Mm-hmm. And then
I won't say how often I change my kid sheets.
Everything that's quilted, so mattress protectors, mattress covers, if you've got latex mattresses and they're unzippable. I would say the quilted things like quilts, just sun them on a hot, sunny, dry day. That's a really great way to reduce the moisture in those. Dehumidifying is a great way to reduce the moisture in mattresses and mattress covers, but your mattress protectors should be once a month. And these should all get washed with a warm or a hot wash, preferably. Great for killing dust mites as well in the built environment where dust mites flourish. No matter, I mean, everyone fights over what material and, oh, you know, conducive to dust mite growth and not. I just say, like, let's just keep the population down with regular cleaning. And look, if I was to pick a human that liked cleaning the least, it would be me. 100%. I am a disorganized, neurodivergent chick who cannot stand basic menial tasks, but I just connect to how much I love health, and just that's the goal. That's the reframe for me to actually motivate me to do that. And then I actually don't feel great vacuuming. I think the dust really just affects me and makes me feel unwell, even just that little bit. So that's where I bend and get a cleaner once a fortnight to wipe every single surface and do a huge vacuum. I still clean my kitchen and bathroom. I use all of that time that she has on the deep cleaning because not for me.
You need a robo vac.
Yeah, unfortunately, I haven't found one that has the HEPA filtration yet. So as soon as I do, I will absolutely have one of those moving through the house. But the HEPA filtration is really important for someone who is environmentally sensitive to have that in the mix. And there might be one now. I haven't looked for a few months. I do actually check in on that quite regularly. I'm waiting for the day. So who knows? It might
maybe you should invent one.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, so that's really important. And then think about your clothes and think about how often you wear them. Is there stuff that falls to the bottom of the pile, always falls to the bottom of the pile, actually 2 years later it's still at the bottom of the pile, could I just have less clothes? Could I focus on a smaller wardrobe of stuff I really love? That is actually really great for keeping mold at bay as well, because you just don't have huge piles of things stuffed on top of each other. Could I always rotate the spare sheets with the fresh sheets every week so that nothing's living in a linen cupboard and just sitting there for months on end? No one needs more than two sets of sheets, one active, one spare. Anything else is just marketing. We don't need it. And so I think part of the low tox journey that I often talk about is how plugged into consumerism are we, right? That we think we need tons of stuff. We just do not.
What if, I have a question about this. Because in a caravan, for example, we have spare sheets in there because we need them, but then we obviously don't use them very often. Well, we do go away quite a lot, but we don't have to change the sheets that often. If you put them in like a vacuum sealed bag, does that help the issue?
It helps because there's less moisture in that. Like it's hard for moisture to get in. That's definitely a helper. So is sun, like just airing things. If you're going caravanning and camping, like the day before or the weekend before, could everything just get a really good air if it's a bright, sunny weekend? And just get people involved. Make sure it's not all falling on you. Get the kids to like bring the pile to the house and take it to the clothesline. Like we often think it's just, oh, this is just more for me to do as the mum. Like, and we kind of default to that. that place, often there's always that one parent who tends to take the brunt of all the extra stuff on. But if this is extra stuff, let's talk about how we can all do it together, because it matters. Like, health matters, and humidity is something that just builds up on anything that piles up or is stagnant, doesn't get sunlight and doesn't get that regular dry out, then yeah.
With our kids' mattresses and beds, well, our bed, I guess, too, do you think then they should be, like, off the wall always?
I always like a bit of a gap.
Does that not matter?
Yes. You want airflow, and that's going to make it easier for the dehumidifiers to do their job when they are sucking out the extra moisture as well. So even with wardrobes, you know, a lot of us have chest of drawers or wardrobes that we buy in places that don't have built-ins. Just have them a couple of centimetres enough to get the thin nozzle part of a vacuum behind, so that it's never out of reach of being able to be cleaned. That's really the rule. Couches are the same. I remember my mum-in-law had her couch up against a wall in her house, and it was a leather couch, and it was a really humid summer. And leather, I mean, you know, hello, it's a natural material, so that's ripe for decomposition right there. And, yeah, we pulled it away from the wall, and this was before I got sick. I remember just cleaning that with kitchen paper towel and some vinegar, like just no mask, nothing. But it was just because it was against a wall and it was hot. So we want to try and prevent those stifling of airflow situations with where we put our furniture as well.
I have another question. Sorry, it's all
there's so many. I know.
That's okay.
It's okay.
You can ask the questions, Luca, because I'm just sitting here panicking.
No,
thinking,
no, no.
Your face looks so funny.
Like, every room that you start talking about, I'm like, oh, shit, yeah, that's bad in that room. Oh, that's bad in that room too.
laughing because I'm judging. I'm really not. It's more like we all have those realizations. And I just love that I can have this conversation with you guys when you're not sick. No one's sick. Everything's pretty great. And maybe there was that one lingering cough. And, you know, that this is the time. And if you're feeling great right now, do it now. I felt great too. And that doesn't mean you're then predisposed to having this huge crisis. Not at all. But let's just prevent as many as we possibly can by getting to know humidity and getting to control it effectively, and then not ignoring that plumber call we need to make if we think there's a leak. Just get on top of it, because trust me, $200-$300 to just get a tradie to regrout and re-silicone a shower space is way cheaper than a $150,000 three-room remediation project if we don't make that phone call.
That was kind of my question. So if we see mold, because I'm sure a lot of people listening are like, I have mold in my shower tiles, or
most of us do. You know, so that is not even a necessarily a scary realization. That's the good news on that one.
Is that kind of mold bad in the shower tile?
Well, yeah, like, if you just leave it there and it keeps growing, of course. But if it's there now, can you get a tradie to blast that grout, regrout it really, really well, make sure there's no gaps? Can you, you know, your hubby will be able to speak to this. Can you then re-silicone where you see silicone, like mold black in
it's
the silicone?
Always the silicone is the worst. I feel like that always gets mold.
Yeah. Re-silicone. Do the whole thing and then switch to the dehumidifier after your showers. That will be the last day that you ever see mold in your bathroom, unless you have obviously a waterproofing failure or something bigger. But in terms of day-to-day management of a bathroom, you will never have to use anything other than your regular bathroom cleaner that you're using for all the rest of your bathroom in that space, because it's dry. That's the key.
Because that's my, I guess, main question is, like, if you see mold, even if it's like a very small amount, do you have to, like, get rid of it? Can you not just clean it somehow ever? Like, is there ever a case where you can just clean it and it's gone?
Yeah. Like, on non-porous things like hardwood, tile. If you've just got some surface mold growing because it was really humid and there was a bit of dust there, and so mold just started to grow. You often see it on, like, let's just say a floor hasn't been properly sealed. So there is actually like a water damage issue because it rains and the floor, and then you see mold on like your hardwood bed legs, let's say, kind of creeping up. I remember we saw that once. We moved with that bed. We cleaned it thoroughly. We wore masks, and it posed no issues because it was a hardwood product, so it didn't seep into it. You know, we know hardwood chopping boards are the healthiest option in a kitchen. It's the softwoods, it's the cheap reconstituted things like bamboo, pine, that's much cheaper. Those tend to be a bit tougher. But if you see it on a hardwood product like a dining table leg or a bed leg or a tile, or like a varnish, like a door frame, or even sometimes a wall, if it hasn't been there for long, and it hasn't started to eat into the drywall and try and start decomposing things, it's just been like one rainy summer, have a go at removing it, but don't try and kill it. Try and remove it. Use a microfiber cloth because it's stickier than kitchen paper towel. Use something sticky like dish detergent in a tiny bit of water just to emulsify it, and remove it, and then hot wash clean that cloth, obviously, afterwards. Borax is a really good laundry hot wash clean for anything that has been mold affected to try and save it. And you should be okay. It's really when you know that you've got something deeper to investigate is, and I'll share a blog post I did years ago that just gives you like some of those basic signs. It's the tea staining, the bubbling paint, the concrete cancer kind of situation, actual mold that looks like it's kind of growing through a wall versus like on the wall. You can see the difference.
So if it's like on a curtain or something, you have to get rid of it, do you?
Usually, yes. It's pretty hard to get the mold out of curtains. They tend to be a thicker kind of material. You could have a go, and like I'd say it's always worth trying to save something and seeing if you can save it versus just tossing everything because it's got mold. And for that, my recipe is hot 60 degree hot wash with borax, a big cup of borax.
And is the telltale sign like if it grows back, then you haven't got rid of it and you need to chuck it. But if it doesn't grow back, then maybe you got rid of it.
If it grows back, you've probably got over 60% humidity. There's a reason it gets to grow back, and that's moisture.
Yep. Our say vintage caravan, we got mold on the curtains in there, and I was like, it kind of looked like, oh, this will come out. Mm. So I like hot washed it and then put it in the sun for ages. And it did, like it went away. But then so many people said to me, oh, no, you have to throw that out. The mold's still there. And I thought, well, I can't see it. And it never came back again. Mm. But
I reckon
I don't know.
You got it.
I don't know.
No, you got it. I think we often then try and just make it like this world can't have mold in it, and we'll get very sick if you even see a tiny drop of mold. It's not true. It's just, it's really not. Like, we have to not live in these extremes of like trying to have a mold-free world. Because like mold is fungi. Fungi is a very natural and actually very healthy part of our world. And I like to talk about like gut health as a parallel here. Like, things like E. coli in a tiny amount in our gut is actually, it has a function, even though it's bad in a lot of, you know, in a bigger size representation of our microbiome. In a small size kept in check with an otherwise healthy microbiome, it's a great little part of the community. Mold is kind of the same. It serves a purpose. It's a hugely beneficial part of our world. It just is the situation where it then starts to grow in unhealthy amounts in indoor environments that aren't being kept healthy and low humidity. That's, or when you have the water event that you don't actually fix the root cause of the problem, that is when mold becomes bad. But if you see like your fruit and veg delivery and you accidentally ignored the sweet potato that you saw at the bottom, you didn't move it to the top when you got the new sweet potato, and then 2 weeks later there's a bit of mold on it, that doesn't mean you're going to have a chronic inflammatory response presentation and people are going to get really sick. And the stuff that I talked about at the start of our chat, that's where you're headed now because there's mold in your house. No, it really doesn't. We need to just separate out harmful mold situations and learn how to deal with them better so that they don't become worse. And not freaking out about a bit of mold on the jam in the fridge or on your lemon in the fruit bowl. Like, it's really important. Or even the mold in the silicone in the shower. Just re-silicone it and then start dehumidifying. And you can only feel empowered if you have the literacy. Same with feeding our kids, same with anything. If you feel like, oh, my God, this is all new and I have no idea what this is all about, chances are a bunch of people feel like that right now because they've never thought about mold. And I just want to say to you, chill. You will absolutely learn this little helpful language that will stop you from experiencing big problems with mold. There's some basic things that you need to know. And once you know them, we've talked about them today, let them sink in. Don't let this be a podcast that you listen to once and then just stay overwhelmed. Listen again and with a notepad and just say, oh, actually, I'm going to look into that, and really start to do something because that will stop you from panicking and feeling overwhelmed.
Thank you.
I wish everyone could see Kate's face. Right
I'm now. Just like, Alex is sharing this personal message with me to wrap
she's
up the podcast.
She's just been like, she looks petrified
I'm
the entire
petrified,
time.
Petrified, but it's something that Mike and I have talked about. We know our house is old and like you said, Alex, we're all pretty well. Like there's nothing really overt from a health perspective, but I obviously have worked with people who this does affect their health quite negatively and like without sharing your whole story, which I know you've shared before, sometimes it's the straw that broke the camel's back. And so I think it's on our radar and we have so many times we've been like, oh, maybe it's this house, like when there's something that does feel a bit chronic or, when the bathroom's about to collapse.
Yeah, like, I think we've got to deal with that. We can switch this to a consult afterwards.
But it's one of those things where, as you said, like in the busyness of life and also it's not like we don't have money to be like, let's just knock our house down and rebuild it or even knock our bathroom down and rebuild it. So I think, I've been sitting here. I'm not totally petrified, but it's just, I guess, like bringing this conversation a little bit more to the forefront. And there's definitely some things we can do. Like we don't have the dehumidifiers. So I'm like getting off this call and buy one.
So, and you bring up something really great. And I was speaking at this amazing event in Southern Queensland a couple of weeks ago where it was all the caseworkers for the low socioeconomic communities in South Queensland who are flood affected. And we literally spent the whole morning workshopping how can we do low-cost mold emergency relief? Like what could that look like so that we can at least protect people as best we can? What tools can we give them? What can we teach them? You know, they didn't even think about teaching their clients to spend as much time outside as possible while their house is affected and they're waiting for help. Because outside is going to be much healthier than an indoor toxic environment. And there are a lot of people, myself included, who because of everything I went through, I'm like, it's expensive to move house 7 times.
Yeah.
It's very expensive to change all of your soft furnishings, couch, mattresses, cushions, pillows. 4 times we've done that. Like it's absolutely like, and that's only because we had some savings. They're gone now. We're rebuilding and that's fine. And I've been through the victim process of like coming out the other end of that and thinking, okay, staying a victim my whole life is not going to help me make anything better in my present and future. And so we do have to think of those low-cost mitigation options for the people like us who need them. Not everybody can just make the phone call and get $3,000 worth of testing done and then get the best remediation company flown in because often there's only like 3 in the country. Those things aren't useful for people, but I can confidently say that there's always something you can do. Always something. In your case, it might be cleaning everything more regularly with masks on so that N95, by the way, as a minimum, if you're doing anything mold related in your home, and hot wash any clothes you wear when you're doing any kind of mold related cleaning. Could if you Get that dehumidifier. Could you start regularly, every couple of days, making sure you're dehumidifying all around that bathroom so it's impossible for mold to start growing around that room, and just keep it really localized like that? $500 on or $300, whatever, you know, you buy as a unit, is going to be way cheaper than letting it just kind of keep seeping. Is there another bathroom in the house that you could use so there's no new moisture being being introduced? Even shorter showers for less humidity. Like there's always something we can do. I genuinely believe we have to feel there's a position of power that we can take no matter what we're not able to do. Just focus on what we are.
I guess something super basic too, this is something like, because we've built many houses, because my husband's a builder, if anyone doesn't know, is really just ventilating the house, like having your windows open as much as you can. And if you are building, like having cross ventilation is really important too, which is something we're really mindful of when we build. But yeah, whenever I have a shower, my husband always laughs at me because I've got like all the windows open, like everything's open, so that hopefully the, I don't know, amount of moisture is lessened in there. So I don't even get a steamy mirror because I'm like, I've got everything open.
Which is awesome.
My husband's like, everyone can see you in the shower, like my neighbors. I'm like, I don't care.
Good on you. Who cares?
But I think that's really important. And it's funny because, I don't know, people listening, like I always have every door and window open. That's just, I like to live like that. But my eyes were really enlightened when I used to do home visits as a midwife as how dark and cramped people do live, like all the windows shut, all the curtains shut all the time. And yeah, it was a bit of like a adjustment for me because I wasn't used to that. And I guess so if anyone's listening and does live like that, open some windows.
Absolutely. And I will add, when it's raining and when you've got your dehumidifiers, because like hopefully that really has, I mean, you cannot live in Eastern Australia and not have there's no way you could have a mold-free house summer after summer without dehumidifiers because it just is over 60% way too often. And so if it's raining, close your windows and dehumidify. That's the only caveat I'll put on that because we often think, oh, airflow is king, and yes, it is great. But
we don't want to let
in. But if it's 95% humidity outside because it's raining, we don't want to let that in any more than we have to. And that's a great time to dry out the inside and stop, especially if you've got old brickwork. It's actually a great way to mitigate any kind of ideas that mold has trying to grow after the rain.
Yes. Well, I think everyone's going to go run out and buy their dehumidifiers now.
Yeah, definitely will. Have to be AusClimate. I mentioned them because I can.
Or hammering the walls.
Deal. There are some other. There are other brands out there. If if you've only got one local store and you don't want to shop online for whatever reason, the point is to make sure you get one really good big one, because sometimes life happens. Sometimes, like Katie, I will be saying to you, you need the bigger one with what you guys are going through. But you just don't know when there's going to be a tile crack or a flood or a week where it rains 2 weeks solid, a month where it rains 2 weeks solid, and you're going to need something really powerful to keep the house dry. And then your little compact one that you move through smaller rooms. But it genuinely is. I think the humidity conversation is the conversation that's been missing in the what can we all do about mold. So just always freaking out. That is such a huge lever that we have control over, and it's why I spend so much time holding my little climate gauge up on social media and saying, come on, make sure. And like people just get those and they're like, wow, you're right. It's like 70, 75% like all the time in our house. And there can be a lot of reasons for that. Sometimes houses don't dry out well because they don't have eaves and things like that. A lot of modern houses are built as pretty boxes that look lovely and modern, but they're actually really bad at drying houses out. And so, it can be a really helpful game changer for a lot of people, in my experience.
Thank you, Alex. As always, we could talk to you forever and ever.
Saw the time.
No, no, oh my gosh. Great.
If you're still here out there, thank you for staying with us.
No, we love speaking with you, and you always share so passionately, and you have so much wisdom. So thank you for sharing that with us today. And I'm sure we will have you back again for round three to talk about
something else
fun. Meanwhile, I'm off to buy my dehumidifier.
Yes. Excellent. Thank you so much for having me. Both of you just do such an amazing job to inspire gently, which is my favorite way. And I really appreciate you letting me help people with something that often we all just find so overwhelming and too hard basket.
Thank you. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you for listening to Boob to Food, the podcast. We hope this episode made you feel inspired, confident, and less overwhelmed in your parenting journey.
Head to the show notes for all the resources mentioned on today's episode. And if you loved this podcast, please remember to subscribe, rate, and review.
See you next week. Bye.